Since the show began almost 2 years ago, A Change of Tune has highlighted some of the best up-and-coming artists out of these West Virginia hills, with podcasty chats ranging from Tyler Childers to Ona, teammates Scott Simons to Jordan Andrew Jefferson, and beyond. But those interviews have been a bit infrequent. And since West Virginia Day is coming up, not to mention A Change of Tune's second birthday, we thought we'd do something different. 30 days, 30 brand new West Virginia music interviews that range from Morgantown alt rockers to Parkersburg singer-songwriters to West Virginia music venues and regional artist management and beyond, all of which contribute to the state's wild and wonderful music scene. And today we are chatting with West Virginia by way of Florida folk troubadour Tim Lancaster. If his name sounds familiar, that's because he was just announced as Harpers Ferry National Park's Artist in Residence for summer 2016. Which is kind of a big deal. We spoke with Lancaster about that prestigious gig, as well as his experiences making music in both cities big, like Orlando, and small, like Huntington.
He sang his songs with a lover's breath, often found lost for words. Stared at the ground when he'd take his steps. Never bluffed when he placed his bets. When he was through, there was no room left under the table.
So, Tim Lancaster, even though I just named you, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and what you do?
My name is Tim Lancaster. I am, I call it American folk music, but I'm not even sure what that means. I'm just an acoustic instrument and song enthusiast. I care a lot about words and how they strike people and that kind of thing. Just trying to experience as much as I can and then see how I can translate that into a song if I can. And if not, then that's fine too.
Now, how did you begin this role as an acoustic guitar slinging pro?
I wouldn't say I'm a professional or anything, but I guess I really got into that style of playing a guitar. It was in 2008. I went to Wilkesboro, North Carolina with a buddy to go to Merlefest, which is a festival put on by Doc Watson. I went just because my friend was going, and I was into that music. But the first time I heard Doc Watson play, he was about 20 feet away from me, and it struck me like a bolt of lightning. Not to be cliche, but it was really something, and just how honest it was and pure. And then when I started getting into listening and then trying to do my own thing with it, that's when I feel like I finally found what I was supposed to do with my instrument. Up until that point, I was kind of all over the place. You know, you're in high school, you want to be in a band that sounds exactly like Radiohead, or you want to be a band that sounds exactly like Led Zeppelin. But it wasn't until I found this style of music that I was able to be happy with the way that I sounded, and I wasn't trying to sound necessarily like anybody else. Granted, I was taking from a lot of different inspirations, but I was kind of able to morph it into my own voice.
So you said 2008 was really the kind of the point for you to choose this path. Prior to that, did you pick up a guitar? Did you play any music?
Yeah, my father plays a little bit when he's off from work, and he was always around playing Dust in the Wind, and I thought prettiest song I ever heard. So I figured if I could just learn how to play Dust in the Wind, I'd be happy. That's all I want to know how to play on a guitar is Dust in the Wind. And, of course, you know, I finally learned how to play Dust in the Wind. You want to learn more. But then I got into high school and started wrestling. And wrestling, you don't really have time to do anything else, at least how I approached it. So I put all of myself into wrestling, took a break from the guitar. And then when my senior year, I just had enough of starving myself and decided to pick up the guitar again. And that's kind of how that happened, I guess.
Now, about a year ago, I interviewed Tyler Childers, who I lovingly refer to as the redheaded stepson of Huntington because of him not really being from Huntington originally. And you kind of fall in that same category because, one, you are red-haired, and, two, you're not from West Virginia, are you?
No, I think we may be starting our own genre here.
So are you from Florida originally?
Yeah, I was born in Orlando Regional Hospital. Yeah. Not sure the room number.
So you were born in Florida. How did you get connected with West Virginia?
Through a friend. Through a friend of a friend. Yeah, friend of a friend. I first moved from Florida. I think I was 19 or 20. And I had a friend who had a friend in Huntington who had some recording gear. And then I wanted to record some songs that I had, which ended up being my first album that I called A Finer Line. And went over and started recording in this room called The Record Room. And that gentleman's name is Shane Barker. And now Shane Barker is really good friends with Max Nolte. And during that same weekend that I was up here, Max also recorded me. And those are the recordings that we ended up using for that collection. And the rest is history. I guess, you know, after that, I've always felt that Huntington was kind of my second home, because whether I was living in New York City or northeastern Vermont, I was always coming back to check in on my Huntington buddies. And it's always on my mind. And here I am. Like, you know, I was just in California this summer, and I'm back here. You know, it's kind of always been a weird home base for some reason. Some people think I'm crazy for it, but there is something special here, and I think you get that too.
Yeah, and it's different, and you know that. I mean, Florida is a different place than West Virginia, especially Orlando, Florida.
Oh yeah, I think every place is a different place from West Virginia, and those places are. I mean, yeah, every place is just different. It's just what kind of different you like.
What was music like down there in Orlando? What was the local scene like when you were down there?
Down there, you know, it wasn't pretty bad. I'm actually pretty excited because I just, one of my friends, Terry Binion, is coming up to Hurricane to play at the bookstore. She's going on a run up the East Coast and asked me to get a gig. So I'm excited to be playing a show with her again. We called Terry the godmother of the folk community in Orlando.
Aww.
And there's a nice folk thing going on. I played in a 3-piece band down there, called the Holden Boys at the time, it was fun. There's lots of rock and roll. I mean, it's a much larger scene than Huntington. It's like, in Huntington, the cool thing is that no matter what you're doing, everybody knows of each other. In a town like Orlando, you know, you're lucky to know a handful sometimes. But that being said, you know, you keep them close to you, and everybody helps each other out. It was a good time. I enjoyed my time in Orlando. Looking back on it.
So you start performing in Huntington, you started recording in Huntington, and and what was the deciding point for you, the deciding factor that made you want to permanently move to West Virginia?
Well, the first time was from when I was living in Vermont. I'd been living in Vermont for 3 years, and I loved it there. I loved it there so much, and it was really hard to leave. But like we were talking about earlier, we're kind of too young to be set in our ways. So, and I had not lived here yet permanently, whatever, permanently, you know. Whatever. and so I decided to check it out. Got a place here, lived here, really liked it, made a lot of new friends, and those are the same friends that brought me back here, because I lived here for, I think, 10 months or so, and then I got the itch, went out west through the fall and early winter, and came back to Florida for the winter, which was real nice. But, you know, when I was out there, I just... Every time something crazy would happen, I kept finding myself calling my bubbies in Huntington, wanting to tell them about what wild thing happened that day or during that week, and to check up on them and see how they were doing. And one day I was just like, well, you know, what the hell? Let's there's a lot of good things going on in Huntington, and let's give it another shot. And I've been very, very happy since I've made that decision. The people here are great. They know what I like about it is they have there's a great balance between having a good time and the amount of productivity that happens here, which is a very important thing. You know, it's important to have that good time and to be able to get down with your friends, but then also to get something done that's meaningful is even more important than that. And both of those things are happening here, which I enjoy.
And I agree. I can hear it in the music that's coming out of Huntington. And also in the live performances. It really shows that the bands and the acts there enjoy what they do, but work hard at what they do. And, you know, it's one of those little verbs you hear, you know, work hard, play hard. And they do it. They do a good job down there.
Yeah, they do.
Where was the first place that you played in Huntington?
The V Club, and that was with AC30 and... Do you know Lady Bird? They're not around anymore.
No.
But Max, this was Max's band before Ona, years before Ona. He was in a band called Lady Bird, which a lot of those members, Lady Bird is Sweat Band, which is which is legendary around this scene. I love those guys. So, it was with AC30 and Sweat Band at the V Club.
Was that a good welcome to playing in Huntington?
Yeah, it was. It was a very nice welcome. I actually don't recall most of it.
I guess that's a good sign.
Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But I still have friends from that. You know, that's where I met Bud. So it was a good time. It must have been good.
So after playing there, where else have you played in Huntington?
Oh, well, there's Black Sheep, Burritos and Brews, of course. Jake's 21 is just starting to get some shows there. Played there a couple times. There's this Party on the Patio stage.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Right close to the patio. I haven't played the Huntington Music and Arts Festival yet, but I believe I'm playing this year.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And
yeah.
So I'm excited about that. That's always a great time. As a matter of fact, when I moved here the year before last, it was that week was HMAF, and Lord, what a welcoming to the town. I mean, everybody, the day was just beautiful. All the spirits were high. Everybody sounded great. It was one of the greatest welcomes I've had to a town is being around everybody from HMAF.
Take me back to Omaha, in the dust I'll see you there.
I should have, mentioned this very beginning to start. Congratulations on becoming the songwriter in residence at Harpers Ferry and National Historical Park. That seems really cool.
Thank you, yeah. The tone of my voice could not describe how excited I am to be living there for the summer. I actually just... got a picture of the apartment that I'll be living in, and it's this cool building built in 1849.
Wow.
With a nice balcony. I'll have two floors to myself.
Wow. So
I'll have some privacy to work.
Ooh.
So, yeah, I'm stoked.
Can you talk about how you got into that role? Did you have to apply for it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I did. It was very weird, a long, drawn-out process. I actually heard about the position before I had even moved back here. I was in Florida, and Ian Thornton sent me a message telling me about this job. He said that he thought that I'd be a good fit. And then I said, oh, that's awesome. And then didn't hear anything about it for a while, maybe a month or so. And then I guess the park got back with Ian and told him that they haven't chosen anyone yet, and they're still accepting applications or what have you. And Ian sent me that message, and then I filled out the application and included everything that was required of me. And then I got an email back from Harper's Ferry saying that they'll overview my application and to see if I qualify for a phone interview. And I'm like, okay, great. And then I didn't hear back for a few weeks. So I kind of thought that I didn't get it again. I thought it was just something forgotten about for the second time. And then this past Thursday, I got a call from the park ranger there, and she told me that she had called Bud, who was one of my references, and they asked if I was still interested in having the position. And of course, I told him, yeah, I'd be a fool to to deny that. But yeah, that's kind of how all that happened.
It's kind of interesting, Harper's Ferry of all places. How much did you know of the area or about the area before you applied?
Other than that, it was beautiful. I had driven driven through it. I hope nobody from Harper's Ferry is listening.
I'll just take all of this part out.
No, it's fine. No shame. But, I mean, I knew that it was a significant place in American history, pre-Civil War and during Civil War times. But other than that, I really did not know much about it. Yeah, I just found out this position from Ian and decided to go for it. I'm at a stage right now where I'm really into music history, like where these instruments are coming from, the way people lived when they were writing these kinds of songs, that kind of thing. So to get this gig is very special to me because it's kind of what I'm into right now, which is something that doesn't really happen that often with me. I'm usually always trying to chase something. And so this is, it's very cool.
What are some of the requirements for this? How many songs do you have to write? Do they have to relate to Harper's Ferry? Do they have to just relate generally to West Virginia?
Uh-huh. Well, they said to the surrounding region. They only require me to write, I think it was only like 3 songs to perform at the Confluence Festival. In my application, I told them that if I were to get this position, that I would write a full-length album and make a collection of songs out of it, something that's tangible and something that will last. That's kind of what writing songs is to me anyway. So I want it to really mean something. I don't want this to just be something that's just last a summer for a summer. I want this to be something that lasts, you know, generations. I want this to be kind of like Sound of Harper's Ferry, kind of. I want it to stick around. So there, I'm putting some pressure on myself to make sure that I do a professional job with it.
Since you're going to be up in Harper's Ferry, are you going to be able to play in Huntington much while you're there?
I am allowed to leave for gigs. Fortunately, though, I don't have many gigs in Huntington at the time. I think a week and a half after I moved there, I have Red Barn Radio in Lexington,
mm-hmm.
Which is really cool. And so I'll do that. But then I kind of really don't want to play any gigs. I want to just spend my time exploring and learning about Harper's Ferry, because that's what I'm there to do. I don't want to worry about having to play gigs and be places at a certain time. I kind of just want to focus and put all of me into this project here.
Tim, I really admire the fact that you are, like, okay, you said before you're 26, and mm-hmm. you are a musician, not to put any labels on musicians, but I feel like sometimes at that age in this kind of career, people aren't as level-headed or as responsible as you. Hearing you talk about this, like, no, I'm not going to party. Like, I really am going to be mature and do this task because I want to do a good job.
I'm saying this. There's a difference. We'll see what happens.
But still, it's convincing, and that's refreshing. That's nice to hear that you're taking it seriously, because I mean it is a big deal. But you find that there's something you can get out of it to better your own music, and that's takes a lot of thought.
For sure. I'm excited about it because most of the time I won't write a song unless that song is chasing me like a pack of wolves. And so I'm excited to have this experience, to not really have somebody looking over my shoulder. I don't think they're literally going to be looking over my shoulder wanting me to write songs, like tying me to the whipping post or anything. But it will be interesting to, it's a kind of more of an academic way to approach the craft. So I am looking forward to seeing how my mind responds to that.
Yeah, you're right. You could totally just flip out and like be like, go off and, you know, drink some beers in the forest with wolves. I mean, who knows? But right now it sounds like a good plan you have going on.
Man, drinking beers in the forest with wolves. That sounds pretty nice.
I just gave you inspiration for one of the songs. You're welcome.
There you go, yeah. If only they were a native species.
Sweet pea, won't you come back to me? Black-eyed Susan in your hair. Lay you down neath a bed of stars, so I can stay, so we can stay. Watch them fly through a freckled sky. Honey, let's take one for a ride. Sweet pea, won't you come back to me? Because I care, I'll show you I care.
Now, you have a new release out right now. It's titled My Times With You. And now it's, I say new, but it's not entirely new though, right? I mean, you did release it in 2015.
Yeah, I recorded it a couple days before I moved from West Virginia last year. Again, with Max. Max will probably be the one to record everything that I ever did. I mean, at least if I have anything to say with it.
Why is that? Why is he such a good person to make music with?
He's just my bubby. He's just a comfortable person to be around. He's improving and I'm improving. And with each time we do something, it's interesting watching each other grow. And it's nice to not have any real pressure. Like with this, with my times with you, I knew that I was moving and I wanted to record something because I'd been living here for 10 months and I hadn't recorded anything, and I felt weird about that. So I was just able to get up in the loft with Max and recorded these songs in a couple hours. They were all done in the first take, and here we are finally putting out. We just had a Bandcamp release, and even a lot of things have changed, or not a lot of things have changed, but a couple of things. As far as like artwork for it, it has a new cover, which is a photograph of me in a birch tree in Maine, a silhouette image, which was taken by my friend Shane Tolt while I was living in the Northeast. Probably the picture was taken about a month before, or within the last couple of weeks of me living in Vermont. So I thought the image really captured what that album is about. Half of the songs were written in my last year living in Vermont, and then the other half are a reflection of that time in my life.
My Times With You was already available on Bandcamp, on your Bandcamp.
It is.
You could have just left it on Bandcamp, but now you're making a physical for it. Why did you come to that decision to re-release it?
Because I guess I'm tired of having the same two albums on the merch table. Partly that, but I also, when you release something on a physical format, it gives a certain level of legitimacy to that collection of songs. And these are songs that I think are, I think they're great songs, and I don't want them to be written off as just something that I can just throw on the internet. I want them to be something that somebody can hold in their hands and, you know, hopefully their heart or something, you know.
They'll hold them in their heart? Is that what you said? Oh, they'll hold them in their hearts.
Okay. Stop.
Oh, you're a sap, aren't you? I can just hear it. You just, that's...
I'm blushing.
It's fine. Well, it's great. Well, because I've noticed with West Virginia musicians, minus the Huntington music scene and maybe some Charleston and... It seems like a lot of musicians here, they just put their stuff up on Bandcamp and then that's it, which is fine because that's easier for us to locate.
And it is, with that being said, it is really cool to be able to have that option. It makes it very quick and easy for people to access your music. I just found that like it's harder for me to sell at least my songs. I mean, not a lot of people know who I am, but maybe if they see me perform and they like what they hear, they'll be more attuned to buy the album from you right there than be like, oh, well, I have this thing on Bandcamp that you can log on to later when you're hungover if you didn't remember us talking at all, you know? So it's much easier to get the album to them at that moment than to have them think about it later. But well, maybe I should be performing better to make them want to stay in their minds. I don't know.
Although it does take some money. I mean, you have to pay up front. Well, not Bandcamp, but for the physical release. I mean, you have to pay up front mm-hmm. for them unless you do a Kickstarter. And then you have to try to sell those over the course of a year or 10 years or longer.
Sure, but yeah, and I really didn't put that much money into it, you know. I give me, you know, max some money for recording, and then, you know, it's a couple $100, which you sell them at $10 a pop. You just have to sell 20 of them to make your money back.
Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, at the rate that I sell records, that would take a year. So you're right.
Billy Matheny, he was at Taylor Books, or should I say William Matheny, was at Taylor Books about, I don't know, I think it was like last summer. And I saw him perform, and he mm-hmm. had some CDs with him that I think he still had over like a period of like 10 to 15 years. So, sometimes those stay with you, which is not anything against Billy, because his stuff is good. It's just, you know, sometimes got to unload.
No, for sure. And I'm starting to run out of my first album. And so, yeah, I'm in this position where, like, I'm curious, like, do I want to repress it? Like, I still think it's kind of cool. Or should I, because it is on Bandcamp. but it is a weird thing. You do grow attached. I mean, I carried those records around with me everywhere. So it's going to be kind of sad when I sell the last one. I don't know if I'm going to be able to part with it.
Yeah. Talk a little bit more about My Times With You. You said that it was during that transition between states. What is the record about for you?
The record, My Times With You. It is...
you have to think about it for a second.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of how I can phrase it without embarrassing myself.
It's okay. You already embarrassed yourself. Just go for it.
No, it's about... I was... it's kind of about my first experience with love, which I found in Vermont. And then we decided to do different things with our lives, and I moved to West Virginia. And then so the other half is me reflecting on that time that I spent up there. And I'm fortunate to be able to incorporate her. The liner notes of the record is a poem of hers, which I think is very, very cool to have that on there.
Oh, so you'd say then the record's more positive recollections than negative.
Oh, of course. You have to always be positive with everything. I mean, it's like whether or not like things just change. That's just how it is. You have to be fine with it, and you have to take from it in a positive way. You can't let it get you down, because you can learn something from any situation, and that's just going to make you grow. You're always going to be constantly changing. But yeah, no, it's definitely a positive thing. I would say. I hope she feels the same way.
Have you talked to her since the release of it?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Did she give it 5 stars?
You know, I'm not sure. I remember when after she listened to it, she said that I played the songs a little differently. She was critiquing than I would when we were in the cabin. I thought that was pretty funny.
That could be in the liner or the little review on the top of the CD case. Like, the ex-girlfriend says, it's different.
Oh, God.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah, no. But no, I think she's cool with it. I hope so.
So you released this pretty much a year ago-ish. You're re-releasing it. But between then, you had to have come up with new material, right? So like a new release, a new release should be on the horizon?
Right, which is, I have written songs since then, certainly. Not many. Like I said, because up until now, like the songs really, like, if they don't write themselves for me, like, I mean, I'm not saying that I don't put any work into what I write, but I really have to be encouraged by an idea, and which is kind of why I move around. It's almost like I'm trying to chase something and hoping that something is chasing me too, and hopefully we connect at somewhere, you know. So, yeah, I have maybe a handful of songs that I've written since then. Also, an important thing when I'm doing it, I just don't want them to be all these random songs. I want it to kind of have a theme to it. So, and these songs that I've written, they're kind of five, a couple of them could possibly pair together. I really would like it to have a nice flow, which is why I'm most excited about this Harper's Ferry thing, because that basically tells me what my next release is going to be is this thing. So that will be my next release, even though I haven't written any of the songs yet.
I've talked to, you know, a number of musicians in West Virginia, and it seems like most of the folks here that play music, they're also the ones that, you know, write their own songs. They don't really get someone else to write for them. You know, a la like Britney Spears, who doesn't really write her songs. She gets everyone else to collaborate and do it for her, and then she'll sing them. Have you, I just love bringing up Britney Spears, don't I? sorry about that.
Me too.
So with that in mind, the Britney Spears thing in mind, the songwriting, actually, have you written songs for other musicians in West Virginia?
Not in West Virginia, nope. And really not anywhere else to answer that question. People have asked for me to, and I've even accepted, but it just never happens. It's always been a very organic experience. It might happen in a certain way. I might approach each song differently. Like, sometimes the whole song will come at me right away, and I just have to, you know, hopefully I left the pen and paper by my bed, and I'm able to write it down right then. Or sometimes it's a melody on the guitar that comes with me, or sometimes it's a melody on a violin, or it's always a little different each time, which is kind of the refreshing thing with songwriting and myself. But as far as me writing songs for other people, that's a hard thing for me to do, at least at this. I'm not that professional with it. It's mostly just me kind of venting in as poetic of a way that I know how, and trying to make something beautiful from some experience that I had and trying to make sense of it. So it would be weird for me to do that and then hear somebody else sing my song, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, it's also a different voice. I mean, you have your personality, and then if you were to write a song for someone else, that's a totally different thing, a totally different mindset.
Yeah, but granted, if anybody, Toby Keith wants to cover any of them, go for it.
Well, I guess going back to that question, it seems like West Virginia musicians, they're able to write their own music, play their own music, promote their own music, and do everything by themselves, like a DIY sort of scene.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, almost with everything, especially like around here. I mean, you have, in Huntington, you have Brand Yourself that does a lot of the printing, a lot of posters, a lot of the merchandise for the band. Like, everything seems to be able to be covered on a local level, which is very cool. Very cool thing. A lot of local artists that are commissioned by the bands to do, I believe, yeah, the Horse Traders used, I believe his name is Brett Sherritt, for their, for their back cover photo. It's a pretty cool picture and sketch that he drew of them for their artwork. So, yeah, it's very cool to see that. And then, like, Ona used for the cover of American Fiction was a picture taken off of an iPhone from some woman passing by the Speedway. You know, it's a pretty cool thing to see that done, as opposed to like a very professional kind of played out environment that kind of comes off as fake. That's why I like it here. Just, it's very real. It's true. It's earnest.
That Ona cover is probably one of my favorites. It's beautiful.
I have to agree. Yeah. Ona USA, right?
Yeah. It's great. It represents who they
perfect.
Are. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're totally right. I mean, it is really local, and you know, actually, I've just realized over time that the scene here is really, no one else has been able to really help them. They've had to do everything themselves, and by doing that, it's given them a sort of humility, and it's also given them a camaraderie, because they're collaborating with everyone.
Right, which kind of trends with the whole history of the state, right?
Yeah. Well, looking back on what you've done in music, and especially in West Virginia, what has been the highlight of your musical journey?
Oh God! So far,
yeah. Of your 26 years of living, to tell me the one thing.
The one, Jesus, Jonas. the one thing. I'll probably tell you something, but I know that once we hang up the phone, I'm going to be like, "Damn it! I just ordered this thing."
Well, what's been one of the coolest experiences you've had playing music in Huntington?
I guess just like playing music has just given me this cool vagabond troubadour persona, which has allowed me to have the confidence to be able to go places. It's made me feel like even though I'm traveling and I may not even be playing songs in these places that I'm going to, it's kind of always been the back of my mind, like that this is why I'm doing this. I'm doing this to collect experiences so I can translate them into music. And so I guess that's probably my favorite part about it. It's almost an excuse for being young and for making these decisions to be able to be like, hey, let's catch a ride to New York City and live there. Or, hey, let's go work for my rent in Vermont for 3 years. Or, you know, like, hey, let's go to California, you know. So it's nice to have that kind of in my back pocket to use. Like, oh, yeah, sure, yeah, I'm doing this because I'm being a responsible musician. It's my job.
That's an oxymoron if there ever were one. Responsible musician. No, I totally, like I mentioned earlier, you really do seem like a responsible musician. But you mentioned the troubadour thing. You don't go, yeah. You don't play under a pseudonym. You play as Tim Lancaster. Is there a reason why you haven't chosen a different name for yourself when performing?
That's actually really funny that you say that because my mom would love this. When I was in Florida, I went by Tim Holden. Tim Holden. H-O-L-D-E-N. Holden.
Aww.
And I don't know. It's just, you know, you're in your teens and you just want to be anything but yourself. You know, you want to be like, no name could possibly be good enough for you, you know? And so, yeah, I called myself Tim Holden because the name of the band that I had at that time was called the Holden Boys. So it's Tim Holden. Anyhow, I would get mail. Mail was being addressed to me as Tim Holden. And my mom would be like, who is this? What are you doing? And, you know, and looking back, I'm like, yeah, that was pretty silly of me, you know? And I mean, the most important thing that I can be is myself. So I've come to that realization now. And you know, and Lancaster doesn't sound that bad now that I think of it. I think it works. Three syllables. I like it.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, I think it rolls off the tongue, like Tim Lancaster. Like, it works. It works.
Yeah.
You, Tim Lancaster, are now part of the whiz-bang booking and management lineup that Ian Thornton has created.
Proud to be him.
How did Ian Thornton convince you to be part of the lineup that also includes Tyler Childers, Ona, William Matheny, Quiet of the Dell, Jeremy Short, John Ingram Slugfest, and Charlie Brown Superstar, among others?
Well, you just answered the question.
Did you approach?
There was no convincing, I was actually out in California. I was actually drinking tequila at a Mexican restaurant, and I got a message from Ian saying, "Since you're coming back, would you be interested in?" And me helping you find some gigs, you know, and I said, yeah, of course, duh. And so that's just kind of how that happened.
How has it helped you any by being under this?
Oh,
what are the positive things that have come about?
I would not have this Harper's Ferry gig if it wasn't for Ian Thornton. No, he's the one that heard about that and sent it my way. I mean, I had to apply, and he even helped me. He was even sitting next to me when I was filling out the application. I was telling him, I was like, this is the most professional thing I've ever done in my life. And so, yeah, he helped me get through it mentally. And he finds me kicks, like, every now and then, too. I mean, Tyler and Ona are certainly keeping him busy.
Yeah.
and I'm super excited for Billy to be on Mountain Stage. I'm really hoping that
June 26th. That's June 26th. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's going to be a really good show. Yeah. I'm excited.
I love his songs. He's great. I am. Yeah, I'm very excited for that. And then it's also cool. Margaret Glaspie is on?
Yeah, Margaret Glaspie. Yeah, she's friends with Zach Owens because they went, or maybe
Owens,
not friends, but they went to Berklee together at some point.
The rumor has it that they've played some songs on a balcony.
What?
In Boston.
What?
I guess. Years ago, they went. No, I mean it's nothing romantic.
Right? Oh, okay.
I guess they both went to Berklee together.
Yeah, yeah. But they played on a balcony together.
That's what Zach says. we're trying to figure out if it's true. I think Brad even saw her play in Texas and asked if she knew Zach Owens and whatnot. So we just like to give each other all a hard time.
So I guess one of the last questions. How do you see the West Virginia music scene right now, and what do you hope for it moving forward?
I just see it as a bunch of hardworking people who have a vision to make a town that a lot of people, I mean, when you hear about West Virginia, you think that it's, you know, you get a lot of connotations of, like, drug use and obesity. You get a lot of bad ideas in mind when you get in Huntington. Sure, you know, that's going on, but that's going on everywhere. And so it just somehow... we're stereotyped with that, and how I see the music scene, it's almost like a battle on that, and I think we're winning. I think so, and it's nice to see the art community come together and form this wall against that and say, no, we're actually not that. We're actually really good people who really are good at what we do, and so let's do this, you know, and that's kind of what keeps me bringing back, because I really like that mentality, and it's something that I want to be a part of. I want to be on the front lines of that, so I think that it's great, and I think it's only going to get better. Each time I come back here, and it is doing better, and I'm excited for this year, I'm excited for next year, and the years to follow. But you know, all you can do is your best and see what happens. I mean, it's not of our control, really.
I just noticed that you, you weren't born in West Virginia. You visited. Mm-hmm. You now reside here. But when you're talking about the scene, you were saying we and are, just you caring about and being a part of this community. It really shows. So thanks for that.
No, yeah, I'm. No place I'd rather be, honestly.
Tim Lancaster's newest release is My Times With You. You can keep up with the young singer-songwriter online, on website, on social media. You know the deal. You can hear more hashtag WV music on A Change of Tune, airing Saturday nights at 10 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And for more West Virginia music chats, make sure to go to wvpublic.org/WVmusic. I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening. Sky.